We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to kind of say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular.
Okay. Hello, and you're very welcome to Your Politics podcast from RT News. I'm Paul Cunningham. Joining me in studio today is RT's political correspondent, Micheál Lehane, and joining us shortly will be RT's political reporter, Sandra Hurley. But our political guest, who I want to introduce first, is Regina Doherty, the Shannon leader and former Minister for Employment Affairs and Social Protection. Good afternoon, Regina.
How are you?
Not so bad. As you and I and everyone else was coming through Leinster House gates today, there was a big protest from those who have suffered from mica, the people who have seen their houses effectively disintegrate. I noticed on Twitter you were saying you met one particular woman who was finding just the whole trauma of dealing with a destroyed house very difficult.
Yeah, I met her yesterday, Paul, and I came in the gates, the back gates yesterday, and she was standing there on her own. And I waved at her, and then I thought that I'd go out and say hello to her because her own. Her name was Carol. She's from Inishowen. And literally just having introduced myself and told her my name and the party I was from, she burst into tears. Her frustration, her stress was just palpable. And it sometimes it's easy to hear stories from people on the radio or the television and dismiss them of being, you know, very far away. Donegal, Mayo is very far removed from Dublin sometimes. But the stress that that lady was living under, and her daughter joined her later, you just couldn't ignore. And I had to raise it at the PP last night, our parliamentary party meeting.
What did you say?
So last week, actually, it was interesting at our meeting. Nearly every person at the parliamentary party spoke and spoke in solidarity with Joe McHugh, with Joe Carey, and all of the other members that come from the affected counties. Because I'm old enough to remember how lonely it was looking after the counties that were inflicted with pyrite back in 2007, 2008, 2009. And as you know, it took, you know, Shane McEntee was the minister then championing for those affected houses.
Yeah.
It took a while to get that pyrite scheme established. And we know it was 100% redress for the remediation of those houses. And now we find ourselves in a situation where counties Donegal, Mayo, Clare, Limerick, even some in Fingal that I'm representing at the moment don't have pyrite, but they do have defective blocks. Pat O'Donovan said that it'll come to a county near you soon.
Yeah.
So we had to be, you know, in solidarity with the people who we represent.
But what's your solution to it? Am I right in seeing from Twitter you felt that 100% redress was the appropriate way to go?
If we accept that it's the state's culpability because of lack of regulation that has put these people in the situation that we're in, and also acknowledge that the courses of recourse that should be opened to them normally, which is to go back to the, you know, the building suppliers, go back to the builder, go back to their insurance companies, go back to the banks. None of those options are open to them because of lack of regulation. I think then the state has to accept that if somebody's house needs to be replaced, somebody's home needs to be replaced, well, then we're either in for a penny or in for a pound. And so I would be completely supportive of them getting like for like, that whatever they've lost needs to be replaced. And if it's the state's responsibility, well, then the state needs to step up to that responsibility.
But that step is effectively out of step, or that position is out of step with what the official cabinet line, which is that we're going to look at it, we're going to examine it, we're going to talk about it. But it seems to be a step back from 100% redress.
So I will tell you that I have the luxury today of not being in cabinet and having the freedom of being able to have a personal opinion on situations as opposed to the collective opinion that has to bind cabinet together. And I do also genuinely understand and appreciate that the public purse isn't endless. But these are family homes. These are people where people are rearing their children, looking after their mother-in-laws, their fathers. These are our family units. And as an Irish society, I think if ever anything was cherished above all others is our family unit. These are our family homes. These people didn't find themselves in this situation through any fault of their own. And if the state is accepting the liability, well, then we need to accept the liability. I'll be very interested, and I know numbers have been bandied around and they're not necessarily concrete, to see what the minister does come back with in the next week or so. And I really do hope it respects the fact that these are people's family homes and haven't found themselves in a position through anything that they've done themselves.
And that's an interesting principle. Fine Gael is usually associated with balancing the books, you know, being economically focused. In that regard, would you have a price which you think it's going to cost? Is it 1.5 billion? Is it 2 billion? Or are you basically saying it's open? Whatever it costs, that's what needs to be done.
So do you know, I do know from experience is that whatever price we put on something, it ends up being far greater than we have ever anticipated. And whether that's delivering infrastructural projects or buildings or, you know, what I do know is that if the state feels that it has no choice but to, you know, be liable for this, well, then we need to be liable. And I can't, and you know, it isn't easy to put an end game on it. If there are curtailments put on it in the next couple of weeks, I think that would seek to sow division amongst communities, which I think would be genuinely unfair. So,
okay,
I'm not saying that the state has an endless purse. They don't. And obviously, ultimately, everybody in the country will end up paying for this. But I don't think it's a case of we can say, you know, this is Donegal and Mayo, we'll put a cap on it. Because when it comes to Dublin or Wicklow or Louth or, you know, as it will, in some way, shape or form, this is a natural defect and it isn't unique to the quarries in Donegal, because we have it in Clare, we have it in Limerick. As I said to you, we have it in Skerries at the moment in Dublin North.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned a moment ago that you're feeling that you have a freedom to speak, which you weren't able to do when you were inside Cabinet. I noticed you were criticising the government for not coming forward in relation to Metrolink, that there was a story in the newspapers and it took them a week to come out before they said, yes, it could be delayed by 7 years before Metrolink is operational.
Yeah. You know, again, you know what I found disingenuous last week is that the story was released in the paper on the Sunday. Again, you know, from experience, the papers don't print things that are not true. And so all I think that should have happened last week is that the Minister for Transport was away, the Junior Minister for Transport was away. So other ministers were sent in to respond to topical debates in both the Shannon and the Dáil and trotted out, you know, the words that were absolutely committed and there is no delay. And then the minister comes out a week later and says, oh, yeah, there's a delay. I think that's disingenuous. And it makes people not trust what we're being told, which is unfortunate. And I think there's no reason for it.
But is that a party political? You're having a go on the one hand at Dara O'Brien, the Fianna Fáil housing minister, and now you're having a go at the transport minister who happens to be a Green.
The one thing I'm absolutely sure of, having spent 4 years at the cabinet table, is that they are collectively responsible. We're in this coalition as equal partners. And so therefore, this isn't a dig at Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael or the Green Party. This is absolutely, and the person I brought my complaints to was my party leader at my PP. There is a collective responsibility to deliver on the programme for government. It actually doesn't matter the colour of the minister in the department. What's unfortunate is that we said one thing last week from a government response. I had Senior Minister Norma Foley in the Shannon with me on Thursday. My colleagues in Fine Gael had Minister Anne Rabbit with them on Wednesday night in the Dáil. Both ministers were sent out to absolutely categorically tell us there was no delay, there was no change in a government decision. And the minister himself and the Taoiseach on Monday and Sunday of this week said, oh yeah, we're sorry, there is a delay. That's just spin and it's disingenuous.
People don't have a problem. Who's responsible for a shambles like that?
Well, so, you know, I actually don't know. And this issue is far from over because the National Development Plan is going to be launched in Cork on Monday. What I do know is I was categorically informed that there isn't a problem with funding. What the minister said to us yesterday was that he's only trying to be realistic because he expects, you know, objections to come from on board Panala and he expects judicial reviews. If that was known last Monday, then that's what should have been told to us last Monday.
Okay.
And we could have actually then said, well, you know what, there's a need for maybe a special set of legislation or a special route to deliver infrastructure projects of national importance other than what we have. Because it isn't acceptable just to say, oh God, you know, we've been waiting on this project for 20 years and we expect another 14 years delay. That's not ambition.
Okay.
That's not a commitment to public infrastructure delivery. So,
are you disappointed, Regina, with how certain ministers and how the cabinet is performing? You sound like you're very disappointed.
I suppose I'm a little frustrated. It's not disappointment because I know not everybody can do everything for everybody. What I wish is that there was a proper flow of information. People can deal with disappointment if the facts are accurate. If the minister had come out last week and said on the Monday, yeah, I'm only, you know, telling you what I really feel will happen, which is I do expect a judicial review. I do expect objections. Like, that's not his fault. It's not a change of government tact. It's not a change of ambition. It's a reality. But then we have to deal with that reality to say, if we have serial objectors to public infrastructure development, then we need to deal with that. We need to put in place new provisions, new legislation to ensure that we can deliver as a state. And this is regardless of who's in government. We need to be able to deliver those infrastructure in the best interest of the people and the citizens that we serve in a timely manner. It's not acceptable to say, "Ah, sure, well, you know, yeah, we know." I just don't think that's good enough.
Can I ask you just, we're looking at sort of the NDP. You obviously have a look and a big interest in Metrolink because, as your Facebook page says, you're fighting for Fingal. What's happening in the constituency? What is it that you want out of the NDP?
So ideally, what we would like to see is a new general hospital. What we would like to see, and it's for the best and the fastest growing population, not just in Ireland, but actually across Europe. And I think the census will bear that out next year. But we absolutely need new public transport infrastructure. I bought my first house in Swords many, many moons ago. We were promised Metro North during the sales brochures when I bought that my first home as a 25-year-old. I'm now 50. You know, it's not funny that
you're
we're still I know. So, like, we absolutely need to see clear development. And the problem with the National Development Plan, as the way it's evolved over the last number of years, is that projects never come off the list. We just add new projects to the list so that we don't make counties or TDs or the people that they represent feel, you know, that the priority is not them.
But people will say that Fine Gael has been the party that's been in government for a decade. So if things are just being added to the list and not delivered, that's a criticism of your own party.
Well, so I think the first thing that has to be acknowledged, and I think people do, is that when Fine Gael came into government in 2011, the financial situation of the country was that we hadn't got the money to keep the lights on or pay the social welfare bill without borrowing it, let alone invest. And thankfully, because of the way Enda Kenny and Eamon Gilmore managed the finances for those number of years, we had a jobs-led recovery that allowed us to actually be able to borrow again at rates that were affordable to invest. So we did have a gap, and I totally acknowledge that. We had a gap of spending on anything other than keeping the lights on for 5 years.
But has Leo not delivered?
Well, so Project 2040, which was our flagship, has genuinely started to deliver. And you can see some of the projects. But what we do need to get a handle on is the fact that there are delays in projects because of objections that does need to highlight the fact that we do need a proper way and a new modern way to deliver infrastructure on behalf of the citizens. All you have to do is to go and look at maybe Portugal or Spain that have managed to deliver projects within 27 months, 36 months. Here we are 20 years later talking about Metronorc, and we changed the name to Metrolink. You know, like, we need to look at the way we deliver projects. We also need to look at how we finance them,
We did have an announcement from the Taoiseach that we're going to have a complete review of the Planning and Development Act 2000 within a year. We're going to have planning experts with the Attorney General compiling a report, bringing it to government by September, and the intention is to legislate almost immediately. And when you make those European comparisons, one of the reasons why the Madrid metro was delivered so fast is that the Spanish government owns everything within a foot under the ground, so they didn't have to engage with communities. They were just able to sort of barrel in and get it done. So there are complications there. You know, you can, on the one hand, deliver things more fastly, more efficiently, but you can also fall out with your own population.
Yeah, well, so if I give you an example, and I'm sorry now I keep harping on about Metrolink, right? The TI have done actually a wonderful job in the last 2 years of engaging with the local population along the route because they did have concerns. And to be absolutely fair and to their credit, they've addressed those concerns and are ready to go back out to the local communities now to say, this is what you've told us, this is what we're doing. I was privileged to see the presentation last week, and it really does answer and respond to the people, which is not something that we've been historically very good at in this country. Airgrid is a case in point, north-south interconnector. Here we are 15, 18 years later and there isn't a shovel in the ground. So you have to commend them, you know, where they should be commended. But by the same token, we don't even have a railway order ready to go. You know, 2 years after, we were supposed to have the railway order ready to go. So we really do need to reflect. And I think the minister is ambitious to have that done, that new legislation both passed or published, going through the houses and passed before the end of this year, beginning of next year, because there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to deliver the same as our European counterparts can.
OK, just a couple of quick fire ones. One, when you lost your Doyle seat, you said that the whole controversy around the pension age was one of the reasons that contributed to that defeat. And that issue is still there. Is that something that's going to inhibit Fine Gael's ambitions in the next general election?
So I took the tact of being honest with people. I spent 4 years in the Department of Social Welfare. I knew the precarious state of the Social Insurance Fund and the ratio of workers to pensioners. The forecasts are not good. The reason I said I lost my seat, now it was only one of the reasons why I lost my seat, there was probably loads of others, right? But one of the reasons why I lost my seat was because I said to people that the pension age did need to go up. And I live in a small cul-de-sac of 20 houses. My own neighbours told me they couldn't vote for me, even though I've known them for donkey's years, because they were expecting to be able to retire at 66. The fundamentals haven't changed, except the SIF, the Social Insurance Fund that pays for pensions, has paid for all of the social welfare, extraordinary amounts of social welfare in the last 18 months because of COVID. So it's even worse of a position than it was. And so unless somebody can say we're going to increase taxes, we're going to increase your PRSI and take more money off everybody, all ages today, then there's nothing, you know, there is no magic solution other than to say because people are living longer, maybe the pension age needs to be pushed out. Now, that's not popular. And you can see Sinn Féin are banging their drum to say 65, 65, even though they made it 66 in the north only a couple of months after the election last year.
But what age would you say it has to be? Like, you're going into the next election, that you're going to be asked that question. So what should the pension age be? What would your answer be?
So actually, you know what? And I can say this on reflection now, having come out of the bubble of being in the department. Maybe we shouldn't focus on an age. Maybe we should focus on contributions. And so if somebody can reach 40 years contributions, including caring, credits, well, then maybe they should be able to retire after their 40 years paying into the system, instead of saying everybody has to go at 66 or 67. And that would actually alleviate the fact that there are some people who start work at 17 or 18 years of age and do genuinely hard manual work for many, many years that just couldn't.
And have you floated that idea maybe with Pascal Dunne or Michael McGrath?
So it's gone into the commission. So I haven't seen the commission's report that has come back. Josephine Fealy headed up that commission for the last couple of months. And that might take the temperature or the heat out of the actual age.
Okay.
So everybody will have to make the same amount of contribution years to be able to get back a full pension.
Yeah.
And people could retire at different ages. Now, maybe it's too cumbersome, I don't know. But it certainly would take the heat out of it. And people who don't start to pay into the system until they're 25, you know, wouldn't be able to expect to leave earlier.
Okay. Just one final question. It's another issue which you've been sort of talking about, is this idea of partners visiting maternity wards. We've heard the government say, we've heard the Minister for Health say, we've heard the Taoiseach say that partners should be able to visit, and yet it still isn't happening in a number of hospitals. Can you explain why that happens to be the case? I know there's clinical independence, but it's one people are still scratching their heads at, particularly women who find themselves effectively locked inside at a moment of need and their partner's outside in a car.
Yeah, it is. It's an issue that came to the head, albeit having been raised weekly before the summer recess a couple of weeks ago when the programme about the Rotunda started on RTE. Lots of women outpoured their anger, their hurt, their frustration that night. So I established a female-led Aroxys members group. We met with the women involved that are the leadership in the Better Maternity Care campaign. And we agreed that we would meet with the leadership with the HSE, which we did last Wednesday, Paul. And actually, we had a really good meeting with the HSE last week, and they told us of their intentions and their ambitions. And they were really well received. But unfortunately, the leadership of the Better Maternity Care met with the same leadership only yesterday. And none of what was told to us last week has transpired to actual action yet. And so of the 19 maternity hospitals, we only have had one site visit to inspect whether they're actually following the guidelines or the directions from the HSE. And at that pace, we'll be still having this conversation at Christmas. And so, unfortunately, we are marching for better maternity care next Wednesday outside Leinster House at 1 p.m. And we will be in solidarity with the women, some of whom are now on their second pregnancies during COVID and their partners still being told to wait in the car, or you can come in for the last few minutes of labour. A lot of the restrictions don't make sense. Okay. And we totally appreciate that, obviously, clinical decisions have to be made by doctors. But actually, there's a view that some of those hospitals, you know, much rather partners not being around, visitors not being let in. And that's just not good enough.
Shannon Leader, Regina Doherty, thank you so much for joining us. Certainly a topic we're going to watch again. I'm just going to call in Sandra Hurley of our political staff. Sandra, are you still there?
Yes, hi Paul.
Excellent. Just Regina Doherty was mentioning there the question of the National Development Plan. We know that a cabinet meeting is going to be happening in Cork. It's always a big thing, a big plan with a shiny document, but do we have any sense of what exactly is going to come out of it?
Well, I think there'll be mention of Cork, perhaps, given that it's cited in Cork. And yeah, only a cynic would point out that three senior cabinet members hail from the Cork South Central constituency. We're expecting them to give the full go-ahead to the Cork-Limerick motorway. This is the M20 and certainly other infrastructure projects, I think, centred around the south. But it is a big set piece and the government will be, you know, these are the kind of announcements that the government really likes. They're going to be flinging money around and hopefully spreading it around the country. The question, of course, in relation to the NDP is usually that lots of things get long fingered. Ultimately, we have seen this delay to the Metrolink that Regina Doherty mentioned there. It now seems that it's not going to get started for several years and it's going to finish, if it ever finishes, many years later. It has been pointed out that this is a project that has been announced many times over the past two decades.
Our Kerry correspondent Micheál Lehane is going to get
I don't like Páirc Uí Chaoimh, never did.
Why is that? You loser?
Well, Kerry don't do great in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, despite Kerry's absolute dominance of Munster in football, largely for the last 40, 50 years.
So, is there a hoodoo?
And it was, well, it's all done up now, isn't it? But it's always wet. It's always raining down there. Don't like it.
I just think that that's blatant anti-Cork bias there. You know, this is,
what county
goes
do you
back
come
to some Munster final.
What
Listen,
county
there's no
do you
conflict
come from,
of interest
Sandra
here, but I happen to be from Cork South Central. But of course, I'm able to, you know, just keep that totally to one side.
Absolutely. Micheál, your passport will be stamped in Cork to give you admittance to this fine set piece. What are you looking at in the NDP?
Well, I suppose the NDP, like, there was that big launch in Sligo just a few years ago. So I suppose it's the updating of that, really. And it does seem like things like childcare are going to play a more central place in this one. What exactly that means and what type of investment from a national development plan point of view would be interesting to watch. But that was one of the things that Taoiseach spoke about. He also spoke about the climate issue in relation to the national development plan. Those two particular points seem to be different to what was there at the launch in Sligo a few years ago.
And infrastructure, you know, if you look at energy infrastructure, we're all very interested in that at the moment as the fear of the lights going out is happening. Will we see any crossover between the question of what the country needs to get done in the context of climate change goals and what this lot is going to do, the NDP, or is that all going to be roads and rail and houses and things like that?
Well, it is mainly roads and rail, isn't it? But you do seem to, that central piece of enterprise policy around data centres. I mean, is there going to be some reflection of that with that hint, that clear hint from Eamon Ryan that position as putting data centres as being vitally important may be revised downwards in the period ahead, maybe in the next few weeks or so. Yeah. That's something that Fine Gael don't feel comfortable with.
Eamon Ryan was cast throwing out a few hints of changes and re-evaluations. What was that again?
Yeah, he was talking about two steps on this, really. One, that you'd have a review around the supply into data centres, a connection policy review, it was called by Airgrid. And after that, he was suggesting that perhaps then enterprise policy could be revised down. I don't sense Fine Gael are comfortable with the second part of that. Micheál Martin, when he talks about the first bit, that you look at your supply and what levels of supply are needed for a data centre and that the review would focus on that in the future.
It's interesting that Eamon Ryan, the Transport Climate Action Energy Minister, I don't think enterprise is actually part of his brief. That belongs to someone else.
It does. And I think that that person, that the Taoiseach, would have a clear view. And I would think the Fine Gael view would probably chime more with what Danny McCoy of Vibeck was talking about when they talk about data centres. Probably they see linked to far more jobs in the digital economy than perhaps the direct jobs inside in those centres, which are relatively small. They talk about 20,000 jobs being linked to these centres, not directly working there, but linked to them.
Yeah, well, it was the ecosystem, I think, was the buzzword that was used.
A good word in its own right, but a dreadful one in political parlance.
Sandra, this issue of the lights going out, to what extent do you think that's a real issue in political terms, or we have a little hump and they're going to get over it in a couple of weeks?
Oh, I think it is a real issue. I mean, the headlines are atrocious for the government. You know, any suggestion, even the mere fact that the question is being asked in the National Parliament, you know, are the lights going to stay on this winter? I think that's very damaging domestically. And some of the sort of reassurances from senior figures haven't been all that heartening. You know, today, I think Leo Varadkar said, or the Taoiseach said yesterday, he didn't think it would come to that when asked whether there might be a blackout. Now, Leo Varadkar went a bit further today, but he also said that he couldn't say there would be an absolute guarantee. And of course, it's not just a concern for individual households. This is about investment. It was reported a few weeks ago that Intel had pressed the government as to whether it could guarantee energy supply at a time when Intel is considering whether to make a giant new investment in Ireland. This is really big stuff and a lot of jobs depend on it.
You are our legal affairs correspondent in this podcast. You might know that, but just throw it anyway.
Good to know.
We had that interesting engagement between the Social Democrats co-leader Róisín Shortall and Leo Varadkar at Leaders' Questions today on the extra jobbing of the Attorney General, Paul Gallagher. Tell us more about that.
Yes, a very interesting story in today's Irish Times about Paul Gallagher continuing some of his previous work before he was Attorney General, appointed Attorney General last year. He carried over some of his private litigation cases. And one of them, and this is you know, particularly surprising, I suppose, is that it is the case where the Office of the Director of Corporate Enforcement is pursuing INM and High Court inspectors have been appointed there. And Paul Gallagher is acting for INM in this case. Róisín Shortall said in the Dáil that it was a stunning conflict of interest for an AG to be involved in a case where essentially the state is on the other side. Of course, the AG is the top legal person advising the state, and she wanted to know who authorised this. Now, Leo Varadkar came back and said that he used this phrase that Paul Gallagher was finishing out a number of cases. He said that the party leaders and the cabinet had been aware of it at the time of his appointment. He also said it was not without precedent, although perhaps we haven't heard of this in relation to previous attorneys general. I think an interesting point that Leo Varadkar said, though, he said that the government hadn't been aware of the particular cases involved. I think the next question, and one that was posed by Róisín Shortall, is what are the other cases that Paul Gallagher might be involved in at the moment where he's not acting for the state? I think that the government would be under pressure to reveal that. And they're going to have to put that out there. And I understand that there is some disquiet in legal circles in relation to this. Now, of course, it was stressed in the Dáil by Leo Varadkar that Paul Gallagher would be very aware of his obligations and would be very careful to manage any potential conflict of interest.
Yeah, I mean, he came in pretty quick. This is the INM, obviously is the Irish News and Media, so the publishers of the Irish Independent and the Sunday Independent. But Mr. Varadkar said that Mr. Gallagher is a man of the highest integrity, and he was absolutely certain that the Attorney General would be very careful to avoid any perception of any conflict of interest. But you certainly get the sense that this is a story that's going to run and run. One other story that's running, Micheál, is the question of bonus. A pandemic bonus, which initially sort of started off as healthcare workers, but who knows? Political journalists might also be frontline workers. Who knew?
Who knew? But there's no doubt the government, as of now, have made a complete mess of this one. Expectation has grown. Within their own ranks, there's unease about the whole thing. There's unease about the cost of it. No one really knows where the money's coming from. Taoiseach making it clear yesterday it's not a budget day matter. So it must be money that isn't looking to next year then. So some money somewhere has to be found for this. Whether it's for a voucher or whatever else. And a voucher may take some time because it would involve procurement and the like. So the bank holiday seems certain. But after that, what else can be given out and who would be given to? Will government have to consider that? They're using words like challenging, which is code for absolute mess.
Sandra, how did such a nice idea turn out so badly?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, everyone reports, people think of nurses on the front line, doctors on the front lines. They are heroes. They're the ones who donned PPE and put the, you know, their own health and their family's health in danger. And how did this, everyone agrees that perhaps they should get something, but how did this mushroom beyond that? And of course, the problem for the government is partly this is a mess of their own making. They raised expectations. Several ministers included other groups when they mentioned that other people should get bonuses. There was even mention of civil servants, and Leo Varadkar, I think, was asked by Brian Dobson, was he seriously suggesting that somebody working at home on a laptop was the same as, you know, a nurse on the front line in a hospital on a COVID ward? And Leo Varadkar backed away from that. But they have raised expectations. It's a really difficult one for the government to square. it potentially pits, you know, private workers versus public workers. Very difficult to carve something out for private workers in relation to tax credits or something like that. It's going to be very hard to limit this once they start opening up the money box here. It's going to be very hard to contain it and to put some sort of scheme together that has limits on it. It's really difficult for the government to win. They certainly are hoping that this bank holiday, public holiday, that could be seen as a non-divisive measure because it applies to everybody. But we know that the unions have already said that they wouldn't be happy with that alone.
What about the Taoiseach himself and the vaccination work he did? Could he qualify for a bonus?
I know that he said that he was going to do it, and we certainly saw pictures,
No, we saw him. There was pictures of him there, yeah.
But how long did he...
She was at the front line. Surely deserves a bonus, does he?
I think that will go down particularly well with the voters.
But there would be Marie Sherlock, the Labour Senator's temporary wealth tax as well, though, to pay for it. So maybe there'd have to be that.
So he'd get it and then have to give it back?
Yeah.
Maybe you could do it in public, you know? Yeah. Take a, give with the left and take away with the right. One last question, just because even though it's an issue we've done on a lot of occasions, it's just such a real issue and it's getting worse, and that's the question of rent. Some startling statistics came out this week, Sandra, just proving once again what an absolute nightmare it is to try and deal with the question of houses for homeowners, for renters, for everyone.
Yes, really difficult for the government, I think, to defend their performance in this area. You know, the accusation is that the government policy to try to control rents has failed miserably. That's the words of Cian O'Callaghan from the Social Democrats. We had a new report out saying that rents have gone up 7% nationally, and the figure is up to 15% and higher in some parts of the country. It simply hasn't worked. And there are other measures. There's a new cap linked to inflation, which has been in place since July. Now, that hasn't fed into the new figures yet. The government response today, the housing minister has said that, you know, he's calling on the Rental Tenancies Board to get tougher with landlords who might be evading the controls that are in place. But it's just not working. And I think we saw that today at Leaders' Questions, where Sinn Féin was pushing, Piers Doherty was pushing Leo Varadkar on this. Sinn Féin is calling for a three-year ban on rent increases and a refundable tax credit, I think, equating to 1 month's rent. And that might be a popular policy in some quarters.
And Micheál, just on that issue of Leo Varadkar and his engagement with Piers Doherty on Thursday, he spent an awful lot of his time, he gets 3 minutes initially and then another follow-up minute, an awful lot of time just lashing Sinn Féin for being populist as opposed to dealing with the question that was coming across. He felt that words were being put in his mouth and that was the reason for it. But like, it's not as if it hasn't happened.
It happens every Thursday. Yeah, there's plenty of niggle there. I think it suits both Fine Gael and Sinn Féin, really.
That old one, that's it. It sidelines everyone else.
I think so, yeah. I don't think it does either of them any harm. And it is the two of the big figures from those parties squaring up against each other. And it's going to continue. It isn't the most edifying. It isn't the most enlightening a lot of the time. Whose actual fault that is, I'm not so sure. But it's likely to continue.
I like that. I'm not so sure. That's diplomatically called ducking the issue. Go on. Who's to blame?
I don't, as we'd say, there's two of them in it. On Kerry Fraser's, one of the best polished lines of the week, stored away, training ground moves, came from Michael Healy-Ray this morning when he talked about Eamon Ryan giving an interview recently where he said his favourite song was Dancing in the Dark by Bruce Springsteen. And Michael Healy-Ray then used that and said, well, we will all be dancing in the dark if the lights go out this winter as a result of you, Minister. So,
da-da-dam. Sandra, did you want to get in there?
Yes, I was just going to say it's interesting if you follow some of this on Twitter on Leaders' Questions. Sinn Féin have been very clever with their social media videos, capturing parts of Leaders' Questions and showing their people putting the leaders of the government under pressure. But Fine Gael are kind of fighting back now. They've got their own videos out there, you know, little snippets of them. And if you look at the one they're doing today, it's focusing on that constant attack line from Fine Gael that Sinn Féin is being populist. Again, the question is whether this has traction with voters. We don't know. But I think the parties are all aware that a lot of this, a lot of how politics is digested by individuals, that is happening on social media. And they have to parcel their policies and their attacks in a way that reaches individual voters.
For all the noise that you do get on Thursday between Piers Doherty and Leo Varadkar, noise in the sense of the levels it goes up, I do think for intensity and perhaps raw emotion, it's the exchanges between Mary Lou MacDonald and Micheál Martin that perhaps are edgier in real terms. And we saw that during the week again.
Yeah, it was sort of visceral.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Just before we go, there is a big issue, which is the question of corporate tax rate. Clearly, the person we need to speak to is our former business editor now, political coverage editor, David Murphy. We've heard about this coming for years, but the big ship is about to come into port.
Yeah, that's right. So I think what we're going to see happening is that over the weekend, we will see perhaps a text circulated to all the countries who are going to be affected by this. And I think that...
So this is the OECD, this big organisation.
Exactly,
looking
yeah.
at a big deal. It's got more than 130 countries on board, but we're not.
We're not. And we are what you would describe as outliers, which is an interesting situation for Ireland because we've always made a big deal out of being good corporate global citizens. But now, really, what's important for the government now is that this is a very big deal for Ireland because Ireland has sold itself as a country where we've got a relatively low corporate tax rate. We've said to the multinationals for decades, it's going to remain at 12.5%. And now, through the OECD and the US government, what has begun to happen is that there's been pressure for a move to increase that tax rate. Many developed countries are now signing up to that. And so Ireland is in a situation where it is an outlier in all of this. And what Pascal Donoghue will want to see is a few things. What he'll want to see in terms of a text that circulated is that he will want to guarantee that if Ireland signs up to it, that it will remain at 15%, that there isn't any chance of it going beyond that. Secondly, he will want clarity regarding how companies will figure in all of this in terms of what level of turnover they will have in order to pay that tax rate. Will it be at 750 million euro, which in many countries would qualify as a medium-sized firm? In Ireland, it would qualify as a relatively large firm. That's going to be important as well. What sectors will be affected and what the base rate will be? So there's some really important pieces of information that he will be looking out for in all of that.
And what's the timeline on this, David? When does that text arrive and when does the cabinet take a decision?
So it looks as if the 140 affected countries, it might land with them over the weekend. And so I think Ireland, in terms of the government, will have to have a response to that, I would expect, early next week. And then the cabinet would need to sign up to it early next week as well. So they would all be kind of critical issues in all of this.
But one last question. If we sign up, then we're in the boat with everyone else and we just have to deal with it. And there's an awful lot of planning one would have imagined from the Department of Finance for such a moment. But here's the thing. What happens if Pascal Donoghue decides that he can't sign because the reasons and concerns he has are not addressed in this new text? What happens if Ireland, if everyone else moves ahead and we're still floating around out there reputationally?
I think reputationally it'd be really, really damaging for Ireland if we're in a situation where we are not in step with the other countries. And so it's a very, very big decision for Ireland to make here because it would be reputationally damaging. Also, we could be labelled as a tax haven by the other countries.
But could you make money out of it?
We have been labelled as a tax haven before. And as a country, we have tried to say that we're not a tax haven. The real fundamental problem with all of this basically boils down to one thing. We, as a country, came out and said that it's 12.5%. That's the deal. The problem is many companies were able to construct a kind of a corporate architecture, so they were paying a lot less than that, in some cases 2% or below. And that was hugely damaging. If it was just 12.5% and that's what companies paid, that would have been fine. And in a way, because of that situation, Ireland contributed to pressure to overhaul this corporate tax regime. And now that it's being overhauled, if we're not on that boat of reforming this, then we get labelled as a tax haven. But it's going to be very difficult for the Irish government to try to get stitched into that text all the things that it wants, because we are now a small country in an ocean of much larger other countries.
And just, I know I said the last question was the last question, but one last question. We know that
you can use all these lines at the weekend when you're working.
I was going to say, breaks, I take the weekend off. David can do it. But just on the, this is like me learning on the job. So I'll recycle all of this information on Saturday and Sunday when I'm working.
Major regurgitation in the way.
But you touched your finger on something which was particularly for parties of the left, which is that if Ireland actually taxed the corporations, we would have the revenue to do far more of the social things that we want to do, but we chose not to. We know that the Apple issue is before the courts. We won't talk about any individual company. But in a general sense, as we stand here in 2021, is it the case that companies are paying 12.5%, or does it persist that a block of companies are not?
I think that there's been a major cleanup of this area. There were a number of taxation deals like the Double Irish, for instance, and you mentioned the case of Apple. I think there's been a major cleanup, but I think the damage was done by the revelations that some of these companies weren't paying what people expected them to pay. And that is part of the problem. Then you talk about the question of how much revenue Ireland will accrue. In a way, because we had a relatively low tax arrangement, that meant a lot of companies came to locate here. And that meant actually we did get a significant amount of tax revenue. Question is really, are any companies going to leave because of our tax rate going up? I don't really think that that is going to happen. But what you could see happening is new companies, because you're always looking out for the next big thing. Many of the big companies that are located here that employ thousands of people didn't even exist 15 years ago, for example. So when new companies come along with new innovations, will they consider Ireland, or will Ireland basically be looking like many other Western European countries where people can set up, and will we be able to win those new job projects? That's the real fundamental question facing the government. The government this week, Micheál Martin, was very clear, tax is part of it. The fact we've got a relatively young, well-educated workforce, that we're an open economy, that's part of it too. I guess what people don't say is that, you know, we're an English-speaking economy in the EU, and we also use the euro. In fact, Brexit may be an advantage for us in this, the fact that Britain is outside the EU now.
I think actually when Micheál Martin addressed in the Dáil, he did mention this idea that, number one, he said the priority was that they were inside the European, and within that context, we were English language speaking, that gave us some leverage, Micheál Martin. But just finally, we've broken through the time barriers here in this, but just from your assessment at a political level, where is the government at?
On this issue, they've been preparing for it and preparing the ground for quite a while now. So then yeah, and it's to be seen to provide a degree of certainty, and that they have negotiated. Pascal Dunne, when he's talking this morning, when it's put to him that you have been lobbying extensively, he says, "I've done far more than lobbying. I've been pressing the case all the time." So it's that sense that they had some control over their destiny on this.
Okay, you heard it here first. Micheál Martin has called it. Ireland is going to sign up to the OECD deal at 15%.
Well, there's been nods towards this for a long time now, yeah.
Grand job. We'll leave it there. We'll find out if that's true next week. But for this particular Thursday, we're going to wrap up your politics podcast. I'd like to thank Micheál Martin, David Murphy and Sandra Hurley for joining us, as well as the leader of the Shannon, Regina Doherty. Please do subscribe to the podcast. Please do leave comments. We'd love to hear from you. But until next week, take care.